Welcome to Fanboy News Network, your guide to geek culture. I'm Jeff Harris.
And I'm Daniel Christensen.
So, anyway, welcome back. Not so much vacation last week as Jill wanted to fill in so she could talk about her adventures in California.
Of course.
And I said last week again. I mean last... I always do that. Last episode.
Last time.
Yeah.
Previously on Fanboy News Network.
Yes. But, yeah. Anyway,
Yeah, well, it worked out well because we were having some issues at home, so it all worked, you know?
Yeah.
So, hi.
Hi.
Oh, by the way, thank you, Jilly. I stand duly admonished and educated, even though I actually haven't had a chance to listen to the podcast yet.
But you know you were admonished.
I was admonished and educated, and it simply boils down to we come from two different approaches to the same set of facts, so it all works out.
That's going to get you in trouble, right there.
Okay.
Right there. I'm just telling you.
English major.
Yeah. All right. So, well, remember, it's because of bad English. Bad English.
Won't go there.
Yeah. So this week, it's been weird because there's not been a lot of big rah-rah news, but there's certainly been developments.
Well, when last I heard, World Fantasy Con.
Yeah.
I remember seeing it the morning that John Scalzi made it known about how crappy of a harassment policy there was. And things seem to have at least maybe.
It's hard to tell. I was trying to track down information. First off, there's not a lot of news coming out of the convention. It was last weekend. I can't track down hide nor hair of anything that came out of it news-wise except for one thing, which we'll touch on in a second. But back to the harassment policy. What I did find was an announcement from the committee basically acknowledging, okay, we upset a lot of you with our harassment policy.
Duh.
Which, to recap, I mean, we described it last episode as, you know, unless you have to call the cops, don't bother us. Now, the real wording, so I went back and double-checked, was if any harassment is reported, the way the convention was going to deal with it is by calling the cops.
But it's to contact the cops, who in the fullness of time would make their adjudication as to whether or not it rose to the level of statutory harassment.
Right.
Which is a completely different beast than con harassment.
Yeah. So, acknowledgement that people were not happy with that. What the came back was, all right, we're going to adopt the policy from the previous year's convention, which was acknowledged as a fairly decent policy.
Yeah.
Now, whether or not that actually happened, I have not heard. And at this point, I'm taking I have not heard as possibly good news.
Could be, but as has been shown in other conventions recently, normally it takes a couple days for everything to kind of leak out.
Yeah.
So it's kind of in the hide and watch phase.
Well, and, you know, last episode, Jill did say that World Fantasy Convention is, you know, the last holdout of the You Kids Get Off My Lawn Brigade. And that, you know, that reflects a lot in how they do things. But in that light, it's kind of interesting that the bit of news that did come out of the convention and has been making the rounds today is that for years the trophy for their award ceremony was basically a bust of H.P. Lovecraft.
Okay.
And
a little something creepy to be staring down off your mantelpiece.
Well, I think part of it is, again, he is given horror fantasy, but still in fantasy, he is one of the classic authors.
Yes.
And well respected, but
to in the words of the kids on the internets these days, your fave is problematic.
Yeah, and that's exactly the point. It's in recent years there has been a lot of focus on the fact that he was racist and and not in the it was the times. I mean, even for the times he was racist.
No. He virulently I didn't believe it. I believe in going to primary sources. I got the annotated complete works of Lovecraft from the library. There is an entire page worth of a poem dealing with, how shall we put it, race relations and one of the rhyming words is figures.
Yeah.
And that's as much as I can say and not... Yeah. Yeah. No, it's horrible.
Now, and I don't remember because I only was paying attention to that part of the news. But yeah, his bust will no longer be what the trophy is. I don't know what it is going to be in replacement. Mm-hmm. But at this point, I suppose for a lot of people, anything is better.
A brass plated statue of Cthulhu would be better.
Yeah.
And still, it would still be in the genre. And yet, yeah.
Well, I think also, the reason they used Lovecraft was, his face is well known due to artwork. I mean, Howard Phillips Lovecraft. It has a face that is recognizable and distinctive. I think that's one of the reasons he made a good bust.
He also had a face made for radio, but, you know.
That's also true. But, you know, I'm thinking, well, do you pass that on to a bust of a different author? Or do you pick something iconic to fantasy genre? Like a sword in a stone, maybe, or something representative of a mythical creature.
It could, yeah. If you're wanting to go for fantasy, there's a whole world out there
that's true.
Possibilities. And focusing it down on the works of one person who, while creative, has some serious issues. Probably not the best choice.
Yeah. It's always odd because, you know, speaking of Lovecraft, there is a video series that I enjoy and I watch a lot called Ask Lovecraft. And it is a actor who was in Toronto, but I guess he's moved to Ohio now. But he had been involved in a play about Lovecraft's life and had gotten drawn into another person's video series to play Lovecraft, found he liked it. And so using the storyline of the other series, the premise is that Lovecraft has been brought back to life and is, you know, passing the time by answering people's questions, not unlike an agony aunt.
I was going to say, so he became Dear Abby's replacement. Okay.
Yeah. And the series does touch upon his issues with race in a way that's like, yes, we are acknowledging this happened. Let this be what the series is about. But, you know, we are not going to shove it under the rug either.
Yeah. And that's an important thing to pay attention with anyone along those lines. I mean, for God's sake, Dr. Seuss did some incredibly racist stuff during World War II. And so it's one of those things where those things far fall. I mean, well, I'm not going to even go there.
Yeah.
Suffice to say, faves are problematic.
So, speaking of racism and World War II.
Oh, I can hardly wait to see where this goes.
This last week, George Takei's play Allegiance.
Yes. Yes. Opened on Broadway.
Yeah, and now I haven't heard any reviews yet. I mean, it just came out. I'm sure there are. But hey, the point is, George Takei has a play on Broadway.
Yes, that's awesome.
And it's covering a subject from history that really shouldn't be forgotten. It's about the Japanese internment camps here in America during World War II.
For those of you playing the international version, that's the American concentration camps during World War II.
Sorry. Rusty. No, but you're right.
I've been to two of them now. I went to Heart Mountain, Wyoming during my big road trip last year, and my wife and I went to Tule Lake this year in California. Yeah. And, I mean, it's an important part of American history that a lot of people don't seem to be made aware of.
Yeah, and I'm glad, I mean, if this play has legs, then that part of history will not be shoved under the rug. And we get a new musical.
Well, yes. I mean, granted, this season, it's kind of interesting because you notice how Hollywood movies seem to come in clumps. Like there was, you know, Ants and A Bug's Life or Mission to Mars and Red Planet and this, that, and the other thing. This year, we're getting two really great historical musicals because there's Allegiance with George Takei, yes. And there's also
Hamilton.
Hamilton, which is carving it up.
You know, what I know about Hamilton is that it is all over Tumblr.
Well, yes.
It is every... And that it... So, yeah, it's... And I'm a sucker for the Founding Fathers, so...
The first video you ever loaned me was 1776, the musical.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see where all this goes, but... now, since we were also discussing fantasy earlier, you, the other night at dinner, had posed an interesting question to me.
Oh, okay. So... Here's the deal. You've seen it. I've seen it floating around several places. The assumption is, or the premise is, that fantasy football is Dungeons and Dragons for jocks. And my question that night was, if fantasy football is Dungeons and Dragons for jocks, does it follow that people who play in rec leagues are LARPers?
Right. And to touch on that, I think we determined no, only if they were playing as under the name of regular football players.
Not necessarily, because with LARPers, I mean, you're not going out and saying, I am Van Helsing.
Okay.
So you are creating your own character and working out your adventures that way. But the problem is that there's a problem in the premise.
Well, okay. So the basic question that needs to be addressed first off is fantasy football, in fact, D&D for sports fans?
Which in some ways you can, I can appreciate it. You know, it's min-maxing a group together, a group of your team compared with everyone else's teams and going at it. But I really liked where you went with it.
Well, it's like you said, I mean, if you hit on the basis of it that its comparison to role-playing games in general is that the major portion of the game is based around character creation. In this case, you're creating your team. And for those who may be not familiar with how fantasy football works, whenever a fantasy football league comes together, at the beginning of the football season, once you've had the NFL draft, then the fantasy football leagues have their drafts. And the idea is that you can pull any player from any NFL team and put them on your team. And, you know, you got first string, second string,
sure,
what have you. And when it's the games are coming up for that week, you're stating, okay, well, I'm going to field my team. Here's my starting line. Here's my... And then the score that you get is based on whatever the statistics for that player that week is. So, like, if somebody ran the football for so many yards, based on how many yards they ran throughout the game is their total score.
Right.
And that, you know, same thing. If the quarterback made completed passes, that right, counts for scores and such and so forth. At the end of which you get, okay, and here's the final score for our fantasy teams this week.
Yeah. So it's to work the comparison, that is the randomization. That's the,
yeah, that's the die roll.
That's the die roll, is how that particular player performs that particular week.
Right, and the other random factors are, well, okay, well, if the player's out for the season, you don't get their points anymore.
Yeah.
You have to bring up somebody from your second string.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's a lot of factors, but it's obviously very popular.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, when I was rooming with somebody about 2 decades ago, he was into fantasy football. And yeah, it was a big... I learned most of my knowledge of fantasy football from him explaining to me what they were doing. And another person who was a coworker of mine recently, he every year would take vacation time to get together with his friends and draft their teams.
Oh, yeah. I remember I had a buddy in high school, many, many, many years ago, 1988. I still remember the team. It was the Ottawa Oysters. And, you know, and that's been rapidly approaching 30 years ago.
Yeah.
So it's been around.
Yeah. Yeah. So is it, to a certain extent, yes, I would say so. it's much the same process. The only difference is they aren't, you know, projecting themselves as a character in the setting. They are essentially acting like the head office.
What you had said the other day, it still sticks with me. And the fact that it is a game, and yeah, it is a randomized game, and it can be similar to other things. However, it's not role-playing games. It's not a fancy role-playing game because you're not playing the role.
No, it's closer to it's closer to what role-playing grew out of, which was miniature wargaming.
Okay.
Where you'd have the, you know, miniatures down, and there'd be battles, and there'd be random factors determined who won particular skirmishes. There was no role-playing in these. It was simply, okay, I've got my army, they have this ability, you have your army, you have this ability, and, you know, those games then evolved into Warhammer.
Yeah. So in short, fantasy football is Warhammer 50K for jocks.
Sure.
Hi, Pusscat.
And Sam decided that that's his point where he's going to go. Hello, Sam.
Are you a reincarnated football player? Yes, you are.
He's almost big enough. Yep. So, yeah. So, no, it was an interesting question, and I thought worth looking at.
Yep.
Since we have last spoken with a microphone in front of us, I've seen a few movies.
Yeah.
Now, in the theaters, the only thing I saw was Crimson Peak.
Okay.
Which I did a bit of a review on last episode with Jill.
Mm-hmm.
You know, short form, I loved it. But hey, it's a Guillermo del Toro movie. Almost a given with me. Since then, I certainly haven't gone to the theater. I just haven't had time. I've had too much going on.
Did we talk about The Martian previously?
I think we had touched on it. I don't know if I don't know if you'd actually given your review of it. So why don't you take this moment now?
I thought it was awesome. I greatly enjoyed it. I understood the most of the cuts that they had to make, but I've been a Ridley Scott fan for a remarkably long time, probably since Blade Runner.
Yeah,
go figure. But you know, and I guess the one thing that stood out for me is he's slowly starving himself to death. He spends a lot of time talking about it. There's that one scene where he comes out of the shower and you see his ribs. Well, you see his body double's ribs as he walks across the screen. And for someone who's starving, he spends an inordinate amount of time eating. Every single time he's like, yeah, so, And I found that to be a little bit of a distracting, but then again,
yeah.
Other than that, great show.
The movie I saw recently, and I mean within the last few days, that really impressed me. So horror comedy is always a tricky genre.
Yes.
Let's start off. It's because how do you create that balance, especially if you want horror and comedy happening at the same time? And so I saw a movie from this year. It didn't get a theatrical release, but it was big in the festivals, which is common for horror. You don't see good horror in the theaters much anymore. You have to go to indies to find it. And so this week on disc was released The Final Girls.
Final Girls, plural.
Plural. And part of that is because another movie came out early in the year called Final Girl. And they are two completely different movies with two completely different premises.
Okay.
So The Final Girls is an affectionate parody of slasher films.
Okay.
So, and, you know, affectionate because clearly the filmmakers love the genre. And this was kind of their love letter to it. So the basic X meets Y description is Scream meets The Last Action Hero.
Okay.
The backstory of this is actually really interesting. One of the writers of the movie was Joshua John Miller.
Okay.
And he is known to the public because, as an actor, when he was a child, he played the little boy vampire Homer in the movie Near Dark.
Okay.
So that gives him cult, but as an adult, he's been drifting more and more to writing. Now, the other thing that makes him stand out is his father was Jason Miller, who played Father Karras in the Exorcist series.
Okay.
And Jason died a few years ago. And the script was initially Joshua's way of dealing with his father's death and dealing with the fact that his father was most famous for a movie where he died in the film.
Okay.
And that he had seen this movie many times. And it's that seeing your father die over and over, because Karras's death is like the climax of The Exorcist. Spoilers. Sorry. So
wouldn't know. Never seen it.
All right.
And yet we're still friends.
Yes. So with The Final Girls, the premise is you have this girl, Max, who's in college, and her mother was a scream queen in the 80s, you know, starred in a lot of slasher films, and was best known for this one movie, which is clearly meant to be like Friday the 13th. And her mom died in a car accident 3 years prior. And it's established she and her mother were very close, and, you know, she's just been kind of trying to deal with life and get on. And she is convinced to go to this special event screening of the film her mother was best known for. And in the process, and several friends go with her, and a fire breaks out in the theater due to some odd circumstances. And to get out of the theater, she grabs her friends, they make a hole in the screen and try and get out to the back of the theater that way. And for whatever reason, instead they find themselves in the movie.
Interesting. Okay.
And so part of this is, you know, the characters overall, and they're all really well-established personalities. And one of the things is they realize very quickly, because as soon as they encounter characters from the movie that they all know very well, they're like, okay, this is weird. We are clearly in the movie. Including the fact that, like, subtitles or credits will actually appear in front of them and they can see them.
Okay.
And at one point have to walk around them. But also the main character, Max, is dealing with the character her mother played. Is in the film. And her mother was not the final girl. Her mother was well known for this movie, but she died in it. And so she becomes obsessed with saving her mother. And the rest of her friends just want to, you know, let's just try and survive, because it gets established really quickly. They can be hurt and killed in the movie.
All right.
And so part of it is dealing with all the tropes associated with a slasher film that the movie is trying to enforce them on them. And these characters trying to beat them, doing everything that every kid who ever watched a slasher film then sat around with their friends and go, well, in that situation, you know what I would do?
Mm-hmm.
I'd do this.
Don't split the party. Don't have sex. Yeah. Don't. Okay.
Oh, yeah. And that's a big thing. They, you know, don't have sex. Don't strip. They have a character who was the slutty girl in the film. And they do all these things to keep her from stripping or doing anything. And it turns out the character was so badly written that with those traits not allowed, she starts devolving into a childlike state because her character had no other, but it's little touches like that. But the thing this movie does really well, well, first off, it does one thing that every good horror movie should do and too many forget to do. And that is we care about what's happening to these characters. As the movie goes on, what happens to them and whether or not they're all right becomes very important to us. And without giving away too much of the plot, towards the end of the movie, I was fighting back, tearing up, and other people watching with me were openly sobbing.
Well then.
So, you know, on that, did we have an emotional reaction to the film that the film wanted us to have? Yes. So on that level, well done, success.
Cool.
The other thing is whoever cast this movie, whoever the casting director was, deserves a bonus. The characters within the film within a film were all very well cast. And most of the cast are recognizable mostly as TV actors. The main girl, Max, was a regular on the first and third seasons of American Horror Story. Her best friend was one of the regulars on Arrested Development. I'm not remembering anyone's name, and I don't want to mangle them.
Oh.
Another friend of theirs was the female lead on Vampire Diaries. So, I mean, these are... And her mother was the woman who played Silk Spectre in Watchmen.
Oh, very nice.
So, yeah, they've got, you know, recognizable actresses.
Wait a minute, her mom?
Well, because remember, the movie was in the 80s. So they had to have somebody who looked youngish, who they could make up for the mom scenes to look older, but had to be young in the movie.
Right, right, right.
So
I was thinking of the woman that was also in Harold and Kumar Go to White Castle. Scandinavian of some sort.
Yeah, no, that's, you're thinking of the same actress.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I'm going to do a written review of this at some point, and I'll get the names right then.
Malin Ackerman.
Yes, that's her. She plays the mother. And so... yeah, it's great, but there's also a whole thing about characters, because they realize what there are. There's this whole thing about the dynamic of the three female friends who end up in the movie, mm-hmm. because you've got the main actress's best friend, and this other girl who was clearly in their social group, but has kind of become catty at them. And there's this big confession: after your mom died, you pulled away from me. And they have this hard talk, and it's like, we don't need to go. It's like, no, you don't understand. I'm clearly the mean girl in a horror movie, and we're probably about halfway through. I don't think I have long left.
But, okay, so it's a very self-aware
But very well done. So, yeah, I would highly recommend it. I mean, mm-hmm. if you're a fan of anything along these lines, or you just want to see a really well put together movie... it's actually funny you brought up Harold and Kumar, the director. His only other big movie was the third Harold and Kumar movie.
Which was pretty damn good.
Yeah, but he's good at his craft. And there are three distinct film styles. The movie starts out pretty standard film. When they go into the film within the film, the color saturations and the lighting become 80s slasher film.
Cool.
And then towards the end, as they're altering the rules and doing things to try and beat it, it becomes this interesting, almost hyper-reality.
Hmm.
That all of them work really well, all of them fit really well. Overall, this movie just works.
Sounds good.
So that's my recommendation, The Final Girls.
Okay, then.
So in other news of geek culture,
mm-hmm.
Turning our weathered eye towards the comic book industry for a moment.
Oh, boy.
Well, so October numbers came out, and I'm sure over at Marvel, champagne was brought forth, and I'm over at DC, I'm sure people were sitting around going, what happened? So Marvel is currently standing at almost, but not quite, 50% market share.
Yeah.
Just massive market share, and almost all of that was, I mean, some of it was dragged from some of the others, some of the indies, but most of it was pulled away from DC.
Oh, yeah.
DC is at like 22%.
Yeah. Marvel has been eating DC's lunch for a while now.
Well, DC had some resurgence over the summer, but it didn't last, and part of it is DC and did this thing called DCU, which is Y-O-U.
Yeah.
Which was encouraging the writers, just write what you want. Don't get too worried about continuity. And part of this was based on the fact that they had lost fan base with the New 52, and as people were just rebelling against that reboot. So the new initiative was to try and bring back some of those story aspects. And it's not that DC isn't doing good books. They do have some great stuff coming out right now. Just not enough of it. And not enough buzz to bring the fan bases in. And they made a decision. Well, it's not so much that they made a decision. They failed to make a decision that is mind-boggling right now.
Don't hold back. Tell us how you really feel.
All right. So, in a couple weeks ago, the new Supergirl TV series debuted.
Right.
And debuted well.
Yes.
You know, it's lost viewers in the subsequent weeks, as often happens, but it had a strong debut and it's had strong word of mouth. So a Supergirl series came out. Do you want to know what character right now has no book of her own and really isn't appearing in anything right now?
I'm going to take a wild shot in the dark and say, what is Supergirl?
Yeah. And it just, I mean, it was enough that when somebody pointed that out, caused the "Has DC Comics Done Something Stupid Today" counter reset.
Well, the thing of it is, I mean, what exactly are they counting on? Because, I mean, they're trying to, what is their big fourth quarter surprise? Are we counting on Batman the Master Race to save us all?
Yeah. Basically, that is their entire plan.
And the likelihood of that being anything more than the comic book equivalent of people slowing down to look at a car crash?
Yeah, and there's been spoilers out there. I mean, obviously, when you get the copy and...
Oh, I will do my best to give as spoiler-free a review as possible, but I mean...
Yeah.
Yeah.
But what spoilers I have heard, if true, I think a lot of second issues will go unpurchased. Meanwhile, over at Marvel, they just finished... Well, okay... They didn't quite finish. The event is still going on, but there were some delays, and they went, you know, we're not going to hold off the rest of our line waiting for this thing to get done. So Secret Wars, while it is still wrapping up, they have done the relaunch of their line post-Secret Wars, which, again, it has a solid continuity. They are following through on things that happen with the characters. So in other words, complete opposite of what DC's doing.
Yeah.
And people are like, oh, okay, well, let's check it out. So I told you before about the changes they were doing with Spider-Man.
Oh, yeah.
You know, he's now running a multinational company. And the thing is, his book has been pretty well received. Because while, yes, he is now rich, he's got all this other stuff going on, he is still Peter Parker.
Yeah.
And a lot of Peter Parker issues still crop up with him.
Oh, I'm sure.
And that's what the fans want. And that's what they're eating up. And, you know, the great success is still with Miss Marvel and Captain Marvel and Guardians of the Galaxy. Marvel is, you know, they've got the buzz already because people go to see their movies.
Yep.
And that their comic books are coming out and giving the fans what they want.
Yeah.
And in the end, that just seems to be the difference. Marvel is, what do the fans seem to want? Well, they seem to want this.
They seem to want a raccoon with a machine gun. Oh, sorry.
But they do want a raccoon with a machine gun, and they want Peter Parker as Spider-Man doing goofy stuff, even if he's rich now. They want, you know, Kamala Khan going out there doing her best to be the best teenage superhero she can be. And let's give them that. Well, DC Comics, let's see. Bruce Wayne currently has amnesia. He knows he's Bruce Wayne, but he has no idea that he was Batman. And so Gotham City, to deal with the fact that things could fall apart without a Batman, convinces Commissioner Gordon to become the new Batman. And Commissioner Gordon, it's like someone decided, let's make him seem younger. He's been weirdly de-aged, even though his daughter is still Batgirl. And so Commissioner Gordon is Batman. Superman has lost most of his superpowers, and they're only slowly coming back. And everyone knows he's Clark Kent now. It's all these things that are like, Marvel's like, let's give the fans the characters they know and love, doing things they know and love. Yes, we're going to do new spins, but the core of the characters, yes, Spider-Man's rich. He's still Peter Parker. He's still swinging on webs. He's still making bad puns. And even though he's rich, some things still aren't quite going his way.
Well, I was
going
to say, because money will not solve all the problems.
Right.
But and meanwhile, let's see. So Bruce Wayne is still being angsty. And Superman can't jump over the tallest buildings. He might need two bounds.
Well, and yet they also have this series coming out. Justice League, the Dark Side War, where
come to the dark side.
No, well, Dark Side's a character.
Oh, okay.
And it involved a series called the New Gods. And what the ramifications was, the Justice League, and this involved Superman, Batman, everyone at their full power. So having nothing to do with the regular continuity, it's off on its own thing. All of a sudden getting their powers merged with the power of the New Gods.
Oh boy.
It's
okay. I'm going to run with a tangent here for a moment. These are the new gods. A thousand years from now, people will be talking about Batman and Superman and Captain America the same way that people these days talk about Thor. I mean, the original Thor and Zeus and...
Right. Well, yeah, that is true. And we are getting where there... Well, there's different interpretations of the character.
Yeah.
Because different writers did things. But no, this is... It's just... The point is that they have this one storyline going that has absolutely no connection with what's going on in the main books. And it's just sort of like, it's just a different continuity. Yeah. Just accept.
I will jump back two steps, though, and say, so Commissioner Gordon is going to be filling in for tonight. The role of Batman will be played by Commissioner Gordon.
It has been for a couple of months.
Yeah. Show of hands, who wants to see Sirius Black play Batman?
So, yeah. Although they seem to be having it more along the lines of the actor who's currently playing Jim Gordon on Gotham. Which, trust me, is coming up next.
Okay.
But yeah, it's just... But the end result is, you know, the fans with... And the comic industry has contracted. I mean, or constricted. Better term. Because back in the day... You know, comics were making millions. They were selling millions of copies. Now it's, you know, if a book's breaking 100,000, it's a huge runaway success.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that is comics have become much more expensive. I mean, back in the day when they were runaway hits, you could still get a single issue for $2.
I was going to say, not much.
Yeah, maybe $1, $2. Over the years, the price point has been growing. Where now, and this is one of the reasons why I go through other means to get my comics. If you went into a store to buy a comic book,
mm-hmm.
you're going to find the average cover price being $5.
Yeah, that's about right.
But the page count hasn't increased correspondingly.
No.
So it's more expensive. People are being a lot more choosy with their dollars. And so if you've got so much money in your comic book budget, and you look at, okay, well, this is what's going on over at DC, and this is what's going on over at Marvel. They're going to go, what is going to be more appealing to me? And right now everyone's going, raccoon with a machine gun.
I was going to say, what is going to give you the more bang for a buck?
Yeah.
I am Groot. Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, I don't know what's going to happen. Although a lot of people are like, well, DC's going to have to do something. I mean, DC's big success right now is, well, for... Marvel, too, really, where the majority of their money comes from, is licensing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the characters themselves are worth a lot more money than the books are pulling in. They just keep creating the books to keep the licenses alive. And to that end, again, this is the... You've got Marvel doing... They've got their movies. They've got the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. TV show. They've got the Netflix deal. And DC... I mean, DC's big success right now is on the small screen. They've got, at this stage, let's see, at the end of this season, let's do a quick count. Gotham, Flash, Arrow, and Supergirl are already on the air, plus iZombie, so there's five. And you still have a adaptation of the Vertigo Lucifer comic coming up, so there's six. And then mid-season, you're going to have Legends of Tomorrow, which is a DC super team. So there's going to be seven DC Comics-based shows on TV across three networks.
And you compare that against Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.,
mm-hmm.
Daredevil, aka Jessica Jones.
Mm-hmm.
What else is...
Well, they've got... Netflix will have other series coming out.
Oh, yeah.
And they are talking about doing an Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. spinoff.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, so... Marvel's got the big media, but DC at least is having success on TV, and they're still trying for the movie success, but it'll be next year before we know. And nothing they're doing is, we've talked about this before, how we are not buzzed about their movies. But so I want to take a moment and talk about Gotham.
It's all you, man. I haven't seen episode one.
So as I've always said, Gotham is this really bizarre mix of really good stuff and really awful. And this season, there seemed to be an effort to minimize the awful and ramp up the good.
Which, you know, given the choice, that is the better choice.
So one of the things they did, I'd always maintain the three best things on Gotham were Sean Pertwee as Alfred, Robin Lord Taylor as Penguin, and Donald Loge as Harvey Bullock.
Pause for just a minute. Pertwee. Related?
He's John Pertwee's son.
Nice.
And if you watch the show, you can see that is definitely John Pertwee's son.
Apple tree.
Enough
okay.
to where people have said if Doctor Who ever wanted to do an episode where the third Doctor appears, Sean could convincingly play the character.
Nice.
He actually did a cosplay of his dad once for Halloween as the third Doctor, and people were suitably spooked.
Excellent.
But back to this season, they have added Michael Chiklis as the new police captain. And, you know, again, we got another strong actor. That's good. The problem with Gotham, one of the big issues, and this last episode I just brought it home more than ever, is they just don't do right by their female characters.
Wait a minute. This is DC we're talking about, right?
And the cliche lives. The last season you had, you know, the Selina Kyle character, who's a teenager in this, and there were whole episodes where she would appear and not say words. They just had her show up just so they could remind us that she's in the show. And you had the Fish Mooney character played by Jada Pinkett Smith, Jada Pinkett Smith is a good actress, and I have to assume it was the writing and direction that made the character awful. It was a character where whenever she appeared on screen, it's like the show came to a screeching halt. And then you had the character of Barbara Keene, Jim Gordon's fiance, who started the season as, you know, damsel in distress and just somebody for Jim Gordon to worry about. And by the end of the season, went crazy, murdered her parents, and got locked up in Arkham Asylum. So this, and in the midst, they introduced a character from the comics, Leslie Tompkins, who in the comics was an old friend of Thomas Wayne and is one of the few people that know Bruce Wayne as Batman. And considering she's a doctor, that's a good thing, because when he gets hurt, she's the one who sews him up. And she got introduced, Marina Picard from Firefly.
Oh, yay.
And as she got introduced as the new city coroner and Jim Gordon's new girlfriend.
Uh-huh.
Now, in the new season, Fish Mooney died last season, so that drag on the show was gone. But they did a new thing. Barbara Keene breaks out with other inmates in Arkham Asylum. She's part of the villains. And they had her go from damsel in distress to completely axe crazy.
Okay.
Just completely axe crazy. And in this last episode, she kidnaps Jim Gordon to hold a wedding. She's going to marry Jim Gordon by kidnapping a priest and kidnapping Jim and kidnapping his girlfriend. And but in the end, so they culminate the storyline, but not in any way that works with the character. I mean, her sole purpose is to be damaged and crazy to further Jim Gordon's plot.
To facilitate man pain. Yeah.
And unfortunately, Marina Bakarin's character is simply there to be her counterpoint, the sane one. But I realize Leslie doesn't have any plot line of her own either. She's just also there to facilitate Jim Gordon's plot. And even Selina Kyle, I realized her plot almost at times seems like there might be something going on, but it always comes back to Bruce Wayne.
Okay. DC, my eyes are going to stick if they keep rolling this much. Don't. Give us solid characters of both genders. Give us characters that yes, they can be flawed, they can have issues, but for God's sake, give them a third dimension. Give them a second dimension.
But here's the thing. This is only a problem with Gotham. Arrow and Flash aren't having this problem.
Okay.
So I think it's the production crew, but I have a feeling because it's Batman, Warner's more involved. Whereas Arrow and Flash, their hits on CW, they leave them alone. The female characters on those shows have their own plot lines, mm-hmm. aren't there just to facilitate the male characters.
Good.
And this same production team are, even though it's on a different network, are the producers of Supergirl.
Hmm. Well, I don't know. Maybe it is just the...
It's Batman. It has to be grim and dark. Yeah. That's what I figure.
Oh.
So, anyway, that's what's going on. Now, Flash, all I'll say with Flash is it's still the best superhero show on TV. I mean, Arrow, I still like Arrow. Arrow's had a couple missteps this season. Overall, I think it's still good. I know other people that aren't quite as happy, but no one has anything bad to say about Flash.
Yeah.
Especially since they introduced the Earth 2 concept.
Yeah.
Yeah. So as we are getting towards that wrap-up point, this is the point where we usually discuss books.
Yes. What are you reading?
So I am towards the end of Shepherd's Crown, The Last Pratchett. As I said, this has been a slog for me just because of emotions. But I do have my next book ready.
Which is?
The Aeronauts Windless.
Aeronauts. Yeah, my thoughts exactly, Cap.
So it's a steampunk book.
Okay.
Written by Jim Butcher, author of The Dresden Files.
Oh, okay.
So it's... And I don't really know much more about it than that. It's a steampunk novel written by Jim Butcher. I like Jim Butcher's work.
Mm-hmm.
That is enough to... get me in the door and at least check out the first book.
Oh, yeah.
And now, he did a high fantasy series.
Really?
Yeah. My wife read them. It didn't quite seem my flavor, so I passed and just kind of stuck with the Dresden Files. But with steampunk, I'm a little bit more interested, so...
See, I give you credit for that, and I encourage you to keep going with that. What was it? I tried picking up Bone Shaker a while back, Sherry Priest's...
Mm-hmm.
One of those things that helped really launch the airship that is steampunk, and they lost me. It was set in Seattle. It was something that I like. It's something that I'm interested in, and I just couldn't get into it.
I think the problem with Bone Shakers, and I've read Bone Shakers, mm-hmm. and I've read one of the sequels, is they also made it a zombie story.
They named one of the characters Levi Blue.
This is true.
That is one of the worst pun names I've dealt with in a very long time.
Well, and you know, I think this is also... All right, steampunk's a pretty broad genre.
True.
Despite the fact that it, based on its premise, it maybe shouldn't be.
Yeah.
Because there's where you could go and read Gail Carriger's work.
At this point, if I'm going to give steampunk another try, and it's only tenuously steampunk, but I'll go for Girl Genius. Simply because I love Phil Foglio.
Well, yeah, I mean, you can't pronounce his last name correctly, but you love him. Phil Foglio.
Foglio.
The only reason I'm a stickler for that is I used to play poker with the man.
Well, and you probably still owe him $10, but you know.
No, we've settled up.
Okay, good.
Sorry, I just had to do that.
No, it's fine. It's one of those things where you only know it because you read it and you never actually say it out loud. It's like the person that I remember many years ago, whose name I will not mention in public, kept referring to one of the characters in Harry Potter as Hermione.
It's true. Well, you know, if you never hear it pronounced, and there's no indication that the G in Foglio would be silent. A lot of people I know call him Phil Foglio.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, Girl Genius you know, Phil and Kaya have done great work on that series.
Oh, yeah.
So, but no, I would say if you were interested in giving another... Because one thing about Gail Carriger's Parasol Protectorate series,
mm-hmm.
It's steampunk by way of Oscar Wilde.
Okay, well.
You know, it's imagine Much Ado About Ernest with airships and vampires and werewolves.
Who was that one that you were talking about the other day online about the mid-80s, wrote in the Company of Wolves? It was on your blog. It was on your Tumblr.
But I think it was a reblog from Jill. Oh, okay. So.
That one's on order for me.
Yeah.
My current one that I'm reading right now is I finally got in from the library, Three Body Problem by she's in Lynn? Something along those lines. It's the one that won the Hugo this year for Best Novel. Wow. Hard SF, thick SF, good. I really am enjoying it much more than Well, no, I won't even make the comparison. It is a good book. Put your thinking cap on. There's plenty of $20 words in there.
So you're saying the Hugo's got it right with this book?
The Hugo's got it right with this book. Go figure.
All right. That's especially with all the controversy that happened. That's good to hear.
Oh no, it was this is a very sharp, smart book.
Okay. So with that, we have hit a point where it is probably one thing I'll say I've been noticing as the stream's gone by, and I didn't know if I could do anything with it. We probably have some weird sound artifacts in this episode.
We have weird sounds when we just talk.
I noticed some weird spikes in the. So everyone, if it did turn out there were some weird spikes in this episode, I apologize. I'll see if I can figure out why and correct it next episode. But otherwise, thank you for sticking with us. And if you'd like to drop us a line, we can be reached through the website www.fanboynewsnetwork.com. Just leave us a message in the comment section of the episode, and we will talk to you again in about 2 weeks.
Sounds good. Y'all have a good one.
This program is produced by Jeff Harris and Fanboy News Network, and is copyright 2015 to Jeff Harris and Fanboy News Network. All rights are reserved, including rights to copy and redistribute this program. All music in this podcast comes from The Footage Firm and is used under a royalty-free license.